Welcome back to the William M. Briggs Show, everybody. Why the dirge? Why the sad music? Well, Trump won, it's true. And Trump will be somewhat of a respite as we slide towards our eventual doom. And that's the theme, this running theme for the next 5 weeks. As we review the book by Richard Legutko, The Demon in Democracy. So that's what we're going to do. Stand by for that. Everybody. So I promised a long review. The book is by Richard Legutko, and he is a philosopher in Poland, and he's also a member of the EU, the European Union. Not a very happy member, but a member. The book is The Demon in Democracy, Totalitarian Temptations in Free Societies. Now, it helps to know the book's original title, transliterated from Polish, is The Triumph of the Common Man. And Legutko is very clear on reminding the reader that the word common used to be an insult. It depicted something low, something almost contemptible, something vulgar. And of course, in our modern equality-driven society, there is no low. We're all equal. There is nothing vulgar. There is nothing high. There is nothing low. Everything is set to be equal. Now, the thesis of this book is liberal democracy. Liberal democracy. The word, it's one word, not two, not liberal, not democracy. Liberal democracy will destroy us all. And just how it will destroy us all is the subject matter for the next 5 weeks. Now, the interesting thing about this, what set him off to write this book, was that he and many people noticed, after the communist collapse in 89 and throughout the early 90s, a remarkable phenomenon happened. The people who used to be in the communist governments, in the bureaucracy, the communist bureaucracy, the state apparatus, the intellectuals in the universities, the entertainers, as we have them here, all of these people who were socialist to their very core, adapted extremely readily to the liberal democratic new governments that were aborning in their countries. This happened in Poland. This happened, of course, Germany was reunified. This happened all over Eastern Europe. And of course, it happened in Russia as well. Now, why is this? The expectation was at the time, although this is not so well remembered now, that the people who were the anti-communists, the people who are the anti-communists, those outside the government, people like Legutko himself, who was involved in the initial Solidarity movement in Poland, these people would have risen and taken over and formed new governments based on anti-communist principles. Well, that's, you can't have just anti-principles, but why didn't these people rise to the fore? What kept them back? And the thesis is, and it's going to be well proved, is that the difference between the communists, the international socialists, if you like, and liberal Democrats is too little to speak of. Oh, there's some differences in ideology, it's true, and that there was a totalitarian system in place in communistic societies, but one which is the liberal democratic societies are aiming towards. And so it was natural for the fish to swim in familiar waters. The liberal democratic systems are not that different than the communistic ones, and that is the subject of this book. And it's a thesis. It is well proved. The book is in five chapters. We're going to detail each of these five chapters. The five chapters neatly sum up the theory. They're history, utopia, politics, ideology, and religion. This week, we're going to concentrate only on history. Now, since the gentleman, Legutko, is a philosopher, a political philosopher, a traditionalist Catholic, and therefore a man who knows of what he speaks, and I mentioned he is a member of the European Union, he is well-versed in bringing to us the reasons that liberal democracy is in many cases similar to communism or international socialism or just socialism, if you like. Now, the interesting thing was in the socialist countries is that everybody was working towards a socialist utopia. Everybody had to mouth platitudes and express warm regard and never could pass an opportunity to say how wonderful socialism was and the benefits of socialism. Everything had to be tied to the benefits of socialism. And we see this in liberal democratic societies as well. Democracy is ever praised. What is against democracy? You're not allowed to be silent when the subject comes up, just as in the communistic countries. Silence is not enough. You must be, or at least have, full-throated support in order to get anything that you say listened to. And that sort of self-perpetuation is extremely similar between the communist, ex-communist societies and ours. Well, this book is so quotable, and I'm going to run into the danger of quoting too much. But I'm afraid we have to do it because I want everybody to read this book. It's a difficult book. It's a dense book, but it's one which will repay your efforts a thousandfold. Okay, here's a quote. In a famous essay, Immanuel Kant wrote about the advent of the era of perpetual peace among the republics. Now, where have we heard that phrase before? The end of history, democracies don't fight one another. Once everybody is a democracy, the world will be as one. Back to the quote. What is interesting, however, is that, according to Kant, this blessed era could, and actually should be, preceded by a phase of enlightened absolutism. And that's exactly what we see that happened in the socialist countries. That's exactly what we see is happening in liberal democratic countries. Everybody understands the peace that is going to be given us once we reach full liberal democracy or full socialism will be utopian, true, but in order to get there, a few eggs need to be broken to make this utopian omelet. And a few people need to be put in charge and institute harsh and draconian laws so that the system might change. The enlightened ones will lead us to this glorious future. Now, this was exactly the same in both socialist and liberal democratic countries. Now, of course, both the communists, Legutko says, and liberal Democrats have always upheld and continue to uphold the view that history is on their side. And you hear this all the time, the wrong side of history fallacy. It's extremely typical in liberal democratic arguments. Everything is on the wrong side of history that is not moving towards equality. The cult of equality which rules, I should say, just about every era of our culture is enormously popular, and I don't see of any way of eradicating it. The cult of equality demands not only equality of conditions, but equality of outcome. And people who want it cannot tolerate any inequality. And since as every inequality is lifted, major inequalities are lifted. All that are left behind are minor ones. But these come to be seen as major because these are the only inequalities left. And so even the most minor inequalities are seen as major inequalities, and society needs then to right them. And so the great leveling force of the cult of equality will doom us all. Well, so here's another quote. The need for building a liberal democratic society thus implies the withdrawal of the guarantee of freedom for those whose actions and interests are said to be hostile to what liberal Democrats conceive of the cause of freedom. We'll just use one example. As I record this, Twitter is having yet another purge. Twitter, the so-called social media system, where they're purging people on the right who do not meet what the Twitter egalitarians think are moving towards the cause of freedom and equality. And so that's what happens. It happens in universities. It happens in the government. The government reacted when Trump won. We do have a respite, as I say, with Trump. But when he won, there was a big story circulating how the bureaucrats in the EPA were openly weeping, much as they were the students, the bedwetters at college campuses, because Trump won. And they can't bear this thought that their rules won't be heeded to strongly. So this happens. And it happened in communist countries, of course. Everybody knows the examples. I needn't give them for communist countries. But the thing here is that it happens equally. Now, the point of this is that, let me just give you another quote. It'll make it clear. After all, in a liberal democracy, everybody knows, and only a fool or fanatic can deny, that sooner or later a family will have to liberalize or democratize, which means that the parental authority has to crumble. The children will quickly liberate themselves from the parental tutelage, and family relationships will increasingly become more negotiatory and less authoritarian. Now, anybody who has paid attention to society knows that this is the case. There's even moves in many places, because of the cult of equality, to open the voting franchise for people under 18 years of age, and even rank children, preteens to be able to vote. And everybody knows the school system, the government-run school system, has moved towards letting kids make their own autonomous decisions about whether to have abortions and other matters. And this is it. The state is subsuming the control that parents once had. Same thing happened in socialist countries. Same thing is going on in liberal democratic societies. So this is the problem. And this is the stuff that we need to be aware of. This happened, these overlaps. This is the main point of this history chapter, the number of things that are the same. Here's another quote. The socialist and liberal democratic interpretation of history is typical of a youngster's. It delivers the promise of a great transformation. It is bold, absolute, simplistic, easily stimulated by optimistic projects. And this is the problem, too. We have the youngsters, he says, relevant to his age, arms this assumption with arrogance, self-indulgence, and irresponsibility. And I think we saw that in the streets immediately after the Trump election and in the padded hallways of our university systems where students held cry-ins and they wept together and they had coloring books with puppies and other things. The thing is, we're teasing them now, and we're all going to have our little chuckle here and warm laugh, but it isn't going to change it one bit. No matter how much we expose the ridiculousness of what's happening with the young on campuses, nothing is going to change. They are not going to slow their inexorable slide towards eventual communistic-like society on campuses. And they're going to move off campus. These people do graduate, you understand. Most of them, a lot of them, the ones who are particularly doing the cry-ins, are moving towards government jobs or so-called non-government jobs, non-government organization jobs, which are just government jobs. Well, here's another quote. This is another comparison. A model communist man was defined by three elements: ideology, work, and leisure. Now, once these three objects were fulfilled, it was expected that the communist citizen would internalize his deep commitment to the system, work efficiently, and abandon for good the idea of revolt. Now, this is exactly what liberal democratic thought has been. From the beginning, the triumph of liberalism and democracy was supposed to be emancipatory, also in the sense that man was to become free from excessive demands imposed on him. Here's the key. I'm going to reread this one. The triumph of liberalism and democracy was supposed to be emancipatory, also in the sense that man was to become free from excessive demands imposed on him by unrealistic metaphysics, invented, of course, by an aristocratic culture in antiquity in the Middle Ages. It's always the Middle Ages. It's always medieval. Now, this unrealistic metaphysics, that's probably the key that we all see. This is how metaphysics demands that a man is a man and is not a woman. But if we can release ourselves from reality, if we can release ourselves from these demanding metaphysics, we could say that a man is a woman. In reality, and under metaphysics, under a realistic metaphysics, the only two people who can marry are a man and a woman. And the emancipatory metaphysics, where we release ourselves from reality, any people can marry, any two, any three, anything. People can marry rocks. People can marry themselves. People can marry, as has happened, fairground rides. People can marry their dogs. And that is exactly what we see here, too. Now, here is one we all know, a result of the cult of equality. But the liberal democratic thought and practice increasingly fell into the logic of minimalism. Lowering the requirements is a process that has no end. Once people become used to disqualifying certain standards as too high, impractical, or unnecessary, it is only a matter of time before natural inertia takes its course and even the new lowered standards are deemed unacceptable. One could look at the history of liberal democracy as a gradual sliding down from the high to the low, from the refined to the coarse, from the high culture to the common, to the celebration of the common. Well, this is exactly what happens. It's always the same. Women in the military make a good example. Women in the military are said needed because of equality. This is the only reason. This is the explanation, the sole explanation needed. Everybody should see that equality is all that is needed for having this. It will be pointed out, and has been pointed out, that it would be inefficient, unwise, deadly, and stupid to have women in the military. But the cult of equality says standards will not be lowered. Well, the cult of equality always lies. The minute the women are in and found not to be able to compete at the same level as men, the standards, the unrealistic metaphysics, are said to be too harsh. And these are changed. These are modified. These are lowered. The standards are always lowered. And what, along with the lowering of the standards, are the words, almost always, that the standards either have not been lowered or raised. They lie. They lie out their teeth. They lie brazenly. And everybody accepts it. And once, you know, it's the same. The process is exactly the same as we noted at the beginning. Once the process starts, it cannot be finished because new inequalities will soon be discovered, and these have to be rectified as well. And that will mean a further lowering of standards. It doesn't have to be women in the military. It could be art. Look at our architecture. Look at our paintings. Look at our music, how dreadful and awful and mind-numbing most of our music is. Music to commit suicide to, for the most part, and perhaps that's not necessarily an unplanned consequence. Now, you know, what's driving this is, and historically at least, is one of the philosophers relied on by the so-called enlightened is John Stuart Mill and his utilitarianism. And that's because most people have not read James Fitzjames Stephens, who eviscerated the book in a way that a vivisectionist would be embarrassed to see. There was nothing left of Mill's argument after Stephen got through with it, but no one reads his books. And the funny thing about this was there's a famous passage everybody quotes from Mill. He said, although man aspires to satisfy his drive for pleasure, he will always prefer to be an unsatisfied Socrates rather than a satisfied pig. Well, the argument assumes that people would rather be these thinking creatures instead of wallowing around in their own filth. Of course, Mill got it exactly wrong. Without something high to aim towards, and when there's nothing, no authority, no real or true elite, no real realism, no actual metaphysics on which to found things, people do prefer to wallow around in their own muck. And that's exactly what's happened. But in liberal democracy, here's another quote, especially in recent decades, a generally acknowledged moral directive forbids looking on people's moral priorities, looking down on people's moral priorities, because in the present society, equality is the norm and not the hierarchy. Well, that's exactly right. One is not allowed to judge. This is called being judgmental. But, of course, saying one is judgmental is, of course, a judgment, and the person saying one should not be judgmental is being judgmental. So, as all of the arguments do, it falls apart, usually by circularity. This one does. Most of them do. Some fall apart just by basing it on a wrong metaphysics, but that's stuff, that material will reach in future chapters. One thing that has changed dramatically, and we're racing through this material, and I apologize for that. There's so much in each chapter to get to that we'll never be able to do it in this series, but it is the concept of dignity. Now, we say, in our liberal democratic societies, everybody has dignity and everybody has equal dignity. But before, and in classical societies, in those dreadful medieval societies, dignity was something earned. Dignity was something awarded. And moving away from this has led to our rights-driven society, where everybody has rights. And therefore, everybody must be rewarded. And that's exactly what we see. Because people are supposed to be born with this dignity and born with these rights, they are owed something. And society must give it to them, or they'll cry and kick their feet and stamp and have marches and destroy and pillage and loot and cause violence and mayhem until they get their way, which they usually do. And we're hoping in our respite with Trump that a lot of this stuff is put down. This nonsense is at least quashed temporarily. None of us think it's going to go away forever. Now, Legutko traces the path of this dignity through classical, through medieval times, through the human rights commissions on the United Nations, among others, and shows its desultory path to where we lead today. And we don't have the time to get to it. But what is discovered is that, this is another quote, a right to be a pig and a right to be Socrates were, in fact, equal and stemmed from the same moral, or rather non-moral, as the new dignity practically broke off with morality, source. So the point is, with these idea of rights and with the idea of dignities, it's a thesis deduced, or not a thesis, rather, it's a theorem deduced from these premises that they have, that everybody should be able to get what they want, that everybody is able to self-define themselves, as Anthony Kennedy said. Everybody is allowed to choose what they like reality to be, which is probably okay if you're in an insane asylum. What the difficulty is, and the thing that we object to, is that we have to go along with it. If a person says he's Napoleon, fine and well, but that we have to acquiesce to the lunatic's belief is intolerable for those of us who base our metaphysics on reality and tradition. This is what we're fighting against. We don't want to go along with the madness, but that we have to is the problem. Now, Legutko goes on about capitalism and the old capitalism and its replacement with consumerism. And these are very interesting economics arguments, the Weber's arguments about the Protestant thrift and the old Protestant nature of sin and man being unworthy to enjoy the goods that he has, the crops that he has sown, and so investment took place. But as the Protestants largely dropped the notion of sin, it led to the profligacy that we see in consumerism. And there's much to say against consumerism, but we don't have time to do that now. But we can notice that this phenomena has occurred, quote, particularly in societies in which the fear of sin has lost its deterring power. And that is the case. The sin has lost its deterring power almost altogether. There's also much that he goes on about the solidarity. He was involved, Legutko was involved in the initial solidarity movement that won many real freedoms, freedom in the classical sense, freedom in the sense to do what is right, not freedom in the modern sense to do what one wilt, to do whatever one wills. That is another problem, but we won't get to that. It's interesting I have some speeches by Legutko. We're going to get to some speeches from him. We'll do next time when we start, and next time we'll also get to the idea of utopia. Now, utopia is the thing we're all aiming towards, and we're all certain we could have if only these liberal democratic principles that we all swear that we love were forced upon those nations that don't want it. This is why we see America running all over the world and insisting people become liberal democracies, or at least fall in line with our rules of our abused and abusive metaphysics. That's why we're insisting that other countries adopt our gay marriage ideas and others. But that's for next time. Meanwhile, stick around to the blog, and we'll have much more to say on this as